If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
Sending out good vibes. Good vibes. Good vibes. Good vibes. Good vibes.
108 breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Grime America Show. Coming at you this week with Taverley talking about witches and magic and that sort of stuff and spells.
Natural magic. Sacred.
Yeah. Interesting chat. And we got Magic Graham over here, who probably does more magic stuff than I do, ritualistically.
Or even just reading. I have to read them, so...
No, I have to read the spells.
Well, I have to read the book. So, yeah, you know, I've read.
Do they have spells in them?
Yeah, sure. Some of them do.
Huh. Do you ever have like
happenings?
Yeah.
Well, not when I'm reading, no, but when I'm talking about it sometimes, but I don't want to talk about it. Because that's when it happens.
That's when it happens. Fair enough.
But that's why they say that the wizards are not supposed to talk about their magic. It's weird. It's like, oh my God, well, what if you do and shit happens?
So then you just do the magic?
Yeah, you're not supposed to talk about it, which is kind of makes sense now.
Is that like summoning UFOs too? Does that fall into the same?
It probably does.
It's fine to do it as long as you don't talk about it.
Yeah, it probably does. Yeah.
So Greer's in trouble?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Poor guy. Poor old Richard. Anyway, it's a good chat. People want to skip ahead. There's always a click timestamp in the show notes. You click on that, it'll take you, skip you right ahead past our lazy ramblings here and get you right to that interview. If you do want to stick around, that's cool too. I don't know what we'll talk about. Did you finish your sheds yet?
Well, that's what we'll talk about. I mean, what didn't you ask me last week? So how long it's going to take? Because where was I at last week?
You would not start it.
Okay, well, they're done.
Roof and all?
I shouldn't say that. No, they're not. They're done except for the roof. I just have to put the roof on. So you put
the roof on and shingle it?
Yeah.
And the doors and everything?
The door. Well, I decided just to leave the two inside doors open, like just leave them as openings. So basically you walk in one, and I put the big 42-inch door that I pre-ordered on the right-hand side of the outside shed. So that opens up, and then you basically walk through another big opening into the second shed. So they're connected kind of. And then there's like storage on both sides of those sheds, like extra storage, right? So there's a little spot where you have to walk through. But so I did it like that. So I haven't put the main door on yet, but I think I'm just going to leave the barn doors off because I'm always going to keep them open. I'm just going to leave it open.
Like that's just the door between the two sheds?
Yeah. And I didn't even put a second door on the other shed. Like I just left a one opening.
So but it's just one door.
But it's still considered a mobile outbuilding that's not fixed to the house, right? So that I can get away with the bylaws. Like if somebody had to move the shed, they could just pick it up and move it still. Even though, like I'm going to shingle the top, like it'll be covered. And I'm going to cover the inside, but it's not structurally attached, you know, like they're still separate sheds.
So then you won't insulate it?
No.
But are you going to finish the inside with plywood or anything?
No.
Just that's it.
Well, I'm going to put shelves. I'll probably use the structure to put shelving and hooks, and I can put some plywood on the trusses and for extra shelving up there. Like you could actually with the wood stick built sheds, you can do all kinds of stuff with the interior. Right. So I'm just going to put a couple 2x4s with a bunch of hooks up and, you know, I'll just make it so that it's easier to organize in there.
There you go.
Because I got a warning from the city to the town about the sea can.
Oh, a year later? More than a year.
Yeah. So
is it a year and a half?
Yeah.
And they're just getting upset now?
Yeah. I had already talked to one of the town guys because he came to do the property lines and he's like, you're not supposed to have those. I'm like, look, I don't want it either, man. I need it. Our shed's collapsed. I was going to get rid of it in the spring. And, you know, now we're trying to clean up the garage and get everything out of there so I don't have to rent that anymore.
And so that means now somebody's complaining about your sea cat.
No, I checked because we thought somebody did. And it's just a regular route. Like they just know it. Like, you know what it is? I think one of the old city guys retired and there's two young guys driving around all the time. And I think they're just supposed to like keep an eye on stuff and report. So they make notes internally and then send out warnings like, oh, you've got a sea can on your property. Better get rid of it.
How did they give you a deadline?
They did, but we didn't even get the thing till 10 days or 2 weeks after they signed the thing. So I'm like, I didn't go in there and complain. She was super good about it. She's like, okay, I'll just write down by winter. So we got by winter. I was like, look, both our sheds collapsed. Like they just need you to, but it felt a bit awkward, right? Like, why couldn't you just pick up the phone and call me and say, hey, you got a sea can, what are you? Just ask me what my plans are with it. Like, can't you just.
Why is it any business with them? What is on your property?
Well, I mean, this is where it gets into all this stuff. I mean, when I moved here, we had two broken down cars on the property. That's okay. But a sea can, oh boy, don't have a sea can. I mean, it is a bit of an eyesore, but I mean, I was, you know what funny is I was thinking about, instead of building these sheds, I was thinking about buying that sea can off the company or buying another one. And then that was before I knew that they weren't allowed, but I thought they would have had a whole business of like, cladding sea cans with something like just a, you know, like a nice looking, to make it look more like a shed or make it look like, you know. But there wasn't really a lot out there. I thought, how come somebody hasn't come up with like a drape for a sea can, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you're supposed to have sea cans in my county either. But I see an awful lot of sea cans.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems pretty unenforceable. I mean, in the county, I'd be like, who the fuck are you, buddy? I think you better fucking ride.
Well, I don't think a county would have that kind of control, would they? It would be your township, right?
I'm not part of a township.
Well, that's why you're out there. that's why the county should be.
I came out here so that you couldn't tell me anything about sea cans.
But I'll tell you what, it's been fun building the sheds though. I've really enjoyed it. I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna do when these are done now? I mean, I've still got the flooring. I'm still waiting for the flooring for the bathroom, but dude, I mean, I think we put them up quick. It was only a few days, a few hours for 3 or 4 days. And they're up. I mean, I think we were building it like almost as fast as like if you were to hire somebody to build them. I mean, we were just putting the walls together. Like the first six walls went up super fast, except I ran into some problems with, and I had to adjust the height on all the walls and stuff before I caught a few. I almost got into a few mistakes, but then we're putting them this close together. So I had to pre-build and prime that whole wall and then put it up with the truss and everything. And then we realized it's easier to build it, the end walls to build with the truss on top. Cause I hate trying to nail the trusses down with like toe nailing them in there.
Yeah, it should go pretty quick. I mean, you just whip that floor up in the walls. I mean, the trickiest part's going to be the roof.
And the doors.
You have most of the roof on. You have the trusses pre-made.
Yeah, we're just putting the fascia on now. The trusses are there. So it's going to be pretty quick, I think, putting that up too.
And then you got to plywood the trusses?
Yeah.
And then you got to put the shingles on.
Yeah.
You got another couple of days of work there, buddy.
Oh yeah, no, and the trim like that—that's all the finicky stuff, right? The trim, even.
But you can move. No, you gotta. So you gotta finish the roof, and then you can move in at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And that'll take my time on the outside stuff. Yeah.
Are you putting siding on?
I don't know yet. I might do side because two sides of each shed are hidden. Two are up against the house, and two are up against each other. I might just do siding on four sides. Just going to sit there like that, right? I'll prime it all. I'll put something on it to protect it. I'm going to water seal the inside.
I just paint it.
We're going to paint it. I might paint it.
So it seems a lot cheaper than siding.
Yeah.
and definitely way faster.
We might just match the house colors.
Lighting starts to get weird, you know, when you're trying to meet those corners up and go around doors. And I mean, you always have these little finishing pieces, you know, not the end of the world. It just takes a lot longer than paint.
Yeah.
For probably just to get wrecked in the hail.
Yeah.
I don't know if it hails there like here.
It doesn't seem to hail that bad, but it's been raining. I mean, I thought it was going to be sunny all week, and I feel like we haven't even really had summer. We haven't had that hot stretch of like 1 or 2 weeks of super hot weather. It got a little hot for a couple of days there. Then today it's raining. This week is all cloudy and rainy. It's like it's a very cold, dreary summer still. I mean, usually by August, like this is when I guess we'll get the couple of weeks of real hot stuff, but.
Well, even August long weekend was, dude, I was out hunting last night, and dude, I was cold, you know, it's like August long weekend, and it wasn't even that late, it was probably like 7 o'clock, you know, 7:30 at night, and it was cold, it was because I was wet and on the ground, so there were some extenuating circumstances, my feet were wet.
What temperature was it?
It was probably like, you know, 13 or 14.
Yeah, that seems low.
It's pretty chilly for what should be the hottest time of year. You know, I shouldn't be like chilled in the hottest time of the year. And I'm wearing like long pants with rain pants over top and like two layers of shirts. And I'm like, damn, my feet are cold. They were pretty wet. I walked like 8 miles with soaking wet boots.
8 miles, dude. Oh my God. Why? Yeah. Why didn't you? Don't you have? Didn't you have like hip? Like what? Don't what? What are you supposed to wear?
Go back and forth on whether you're gonna wear, because my boots have the Gore-Tex in them and the spray and all that. But that, like, it's pretty good. It'll hold it off for a long time. But it's like then once it's fucking wet, once it saturates through all that, which is what seems like how it's supposed to work, because it has trouble getting through all these different little layers. But once it's through, it's through. It's not like it's. It's not no longer fighting with any vigor. Once it's saturated, you know, you might as well be wearing runners. So you get pretty wet. You could wear rubber boots.
But those are harder to hike in.
That's walking 8 miles and, you know,
in galoshes.
Up or 50 water. Fucking stories with a 50-pound pack and a fucking rifle gets old in rubber boots for sure. Like that's one of those things I've done once or twice and I'm like, I can never fucking do this again. Wet feet is better than this.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a nice crossover somewhere.
Yeah.
That sort of works well. But there was a period of time yesterday where I was like, I should just take these fucking boots off and go barefoot and just like, and I was like, that's going to really suck putting them back on.
Yeah.
You know? So I just went with it. Luckily we didn't shoot anything. Honestly, it would have been a real hell extraction yesterday.
Point when you're way out there, you're like, okay, pray. I'm kind of praying that nothing shows up.
Yeah, and we've seen a moose too, but it was a little far to shoot at. Miles' turn to shoot something now. We're trying to, especially right now in the early season, we're trying to get him to connect with something. So he's finally got his rifle where he wants it, but it was a little far, 350. You know, I might have taken the shot, but I got a lot more experience. I mean, I've shot antelope at 350. They're a lot smaller target. The thing is, they're also a lot weaker of an adversary. So a clip will take, you know.
Oh, yeah, if you're chasing a moose, you don't want to chase them when wounded moose
because it'll just bolt so far and so fast. And
350 what?
Yards.
Yards, okay.
Yeah.
Using yards.
Yeah, shootable moose. But this is Miles' first shot. So, you know, he wants to be a little closer than that. And it's easy to get closer than that. Too, you know, especially with moose, it's easy to get inside 200.
First shot of the year, you're saying?
No, Miles hasn't taken any big game yet with his rifle, so
okay.
He's always along and always helping out. He might have shot an antelope, but we don't really consider those big.
He took some shots at the elk when we were out there.
Yeah, but he never got one.
I know he missed it.
Yeah, so now this time he's all gone. He's ready. We're gonna get him an animal this month, probably, but. So it's just, you know, I'm super comfortable taking shots. You know, 350 yards of moose, as big as it is, isn't that big. It's probably like, you know, if you held up like a pill bottle or something like that, or maybe a toonie if you held like a toonie would be a little small. Maybe like a lighter, if you held up a lighter at arm's length or something, a little two lighters together. So, I mean, it is a long shot, especially when you're fucking freaking out, which is how it works until, you know, I've been there, dude. It takes a lot of fucking shooting shit before the freaking out slows down enough that you can be like, oh, fuck. Now, when I'm shooting at something, it's really no big deal. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some times when that changes, when there's like a, you know, you see a monster elk or a monster moose, it's going to bring all that shit back. But when you're shooting run-of-the-mill animals, same shit you shot last year, you know, and you've shot 50 of them, it gets, you just don't get that pressure taking the shot. Because that's the thing, you could do all the target practice in the world. It's a totally different animal when you got to pull on a fucking moose or a deer that you've never shot before and you're, got all these fucking excitement and nervousness and pressure. It's buck fever. They call it buck fever. It's a thing. So anyway, he didn't take the shot, luckily for me and for him. I mean, by the end of the night, because we did the 8 miles and the last like half miles up this fucking crazy hill that was too much to take the truck down. We had parked at the top of it and walked down because it was like, if we come down this hill, we might be sleeping out here. We had ended up hunting this different property because the one I normally hunt where my cams are, we couldn't get in there. So much rain that the road is super sketchy. You know, you're out in the hill country, crazy hills.
Crazy. It's the middle of the summer, literally the middle of the summer, and there's so much rain.
Yeah, you've been back there. Just probably didn't notice at the time, but there's a couple of real steep hills there that you just take for granted as dirt roads. You know, there's some gravel roads back there that hold up real well no matter what's going on, but once you start getting more and more out there, they go from gravel to dirt, and then the rain and the rain and the rain, and you just get like 3 inches of mud built up on top of it, which ain't so bad, but when you throw that into like a 45 degree fucking incline up a hill or a 60 degree incline while you're trying to climb a hill, it just like you get so far and it just don't want to go. And it don't even matter what kind of tires you have, because the tires, dude, my tires just had like they were like 3 inches bigger just in fucking mud. And we started going down the hill and we were like, ugh. If, you know, you'd probably get out there, we'd probably be fine. But then it rained another bunch, you know? So that's like, you don't want to get fucking stuck out there. You really don't.
Did we talk about your boat last time on the last intro? Because it was a kind of a family week too, right? You had how was your boat for skiing and or wakeboarding or whatever?
That's pretty good. I'm cutting it apart right now. I mean, we don't do any wakeboarding. We do knee boarding.
What are you cutting apart?
The transom or the splash well. I'm cutting the splash well apart because right now you have to pull out the gas tanks to fill it up. But I want that gas tank to just stay there all the time. And I don't like where they've got the batteries, so I'm going to move those over to one side, and I'm taking out the back seats, and I'm extending the middle seats. They're technically the middle seats, and they're just in the fucking way. So I'm going to get rid of those altogether, and I'm going to extend that back out like 18 inches into a bench. So there's like a bench with two corner seats, and then the two seats for the driver and the passenger, and then the front. And then just give you a bit more room to move around and a bit more storage. I mean, for all the fucking extra size and space, there's no fucking storage on the thing. It's already crammed up. So I'm just looking at, and you get up and those two seats are kind of bumping into each other, right? You got the driver's seat and that other seat is so close behind it that if there's two people in it, it's fucking crazy. They have to be swiveled the other way or you're swiveling into each other and they just don't get used. So it's like, you don't need them all. You need a driver and a passenger, then we'll have like 4 feet of clear space and then a cushioned bench that lifts up and then the rods and the life jackets can be under there. And then I had to cut the splash well apart so that I could put in a marine hatch so that you can just open that shit up. And so they got like a 10-inch by or 9-inch by 6-inch opening that'll unlock and open. And then there's your gas tank and your pump valve and all that kind of shit.
Is somebody, are you, has somebody done that to these boats prior? Are you learning from YouTube or anything like that? Or you just,
Matt seems pretty self-explanatory.
Do you have to do any aluminum welding or anything like that? Or
no, it's all fiberglass. So all I'm doing is like cutting holes and putting in pieces. I mean, the bench I'll just make out of pressure treated wood, and then I'll put marine carpet over it, and then I'll get a cushion made. I was thinking about doing it in Calgary, but I found some places I could just do it online. And I don't need a shitload. If you're getting cushions made for a whole patio set, it gets pretty expensive. But for me to just get one cushion made, it'll be like 18 inches by like 6 feet long. It'd be like $150 or something like that. I'll get it wrapped in leather the same or as close to the same colors as the other ones. And then I want to be able to take just that cushion off too. And then it'll just be a carpeted platform there for when I'm fishing. I can just stand on it and walk around. Modifying the inside of the boat seems pretty simple enough. It's all just plywood and stuff. You know, I can kind of look at what's there and just change it around.
Yeah.
I grew up around the boat, so I'm pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
Fucking around with them. I never had one with a steering wheel before, but.
How's the engine?
Fucking clips. It's still fucking around. You got to keep pumping the ball if you're idling or going real slow. When I'm at dead slow, this is certainly when you're going into the dock, when you're loading onto the trailer, the marina where you're at. There's a whole section you got to go down with no wake.
Would you get it? Would you get a little fishing engine to pop down with it?
Nah, I mean, it comes with a built-in trolling motor I haven't got working yet. I don't know if it's a power problem or what's going on. I'm going to rip that thing apart this week and take a look. And then I think it's just really carbs. I just got the new spark plugs in, so I'll put those in, and I'll probably try. I'm waiting for my carb rebuild kit to come on, and I think that'll take care of the... Because it'll idle fine. It's just a vacuum or something. What's the make? It's Mercury.
Mercury in the 115.
Yeah. 1983.
Oh, dude. I mean, that's what we just saw. Like, those are the best, like, little...
It likes going fast, though. I mean, it sure likes going fast, and it gets there, like, fucking that.
That's what everybody wanted when they wanted. They wanted a little ski boat, like a 16 and a half with a 115 on the back was all you needed. Like,
yeah, you can't quite... If you tromp on it right away, it'll bog down a bit, but you get that because it's just so much pressure on the prop, but you just sort of get that from, like, where you would just be getting set to tromping on it, and it's like... Phew, just like fucking that. Thirsty, though.
Oh, is it thirsty?
Oh, yeah, man, I'll burn through that whole 12 gallons of gas in like a couple hours pulling the kids on the tube, no problem. Which ain't the end of the world, but it's like $5 a gallon here, you know?
Yeah.
So.
1983.
Mercury Tower Power.
It's awesome.
Inline 6. Yeah, it clips pretty good, I gotta say. Pretty happy with it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it was cheap, too, so.
Yeah,
that always helps too. So we're good. We'll get some, if we can get some warm days, we can get out. Wife wants to go fishing this week, but now I've started modifying a few things. So there's a couple things I do want to get done right away. The gas tank thing is driving me crazy. Every time you got to move all this shit. You got to pull this heavy tank out, slide it fucking out, fill it up with gas and slide it back down in there. Seems crazy.
Yeah.
Seems crazy. Nobody's just done that before.
Well, I mean, this is the problem with these older boats that they just never really thought about all these things as much, right? The newer ones would never be designed like that, probably.
No, they would never be. But even just over the years, that someone else wouldn't just buy a $20 marine hatch and
put it in. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's not super hard to do.
It's called the Tower of Power, eh?
It's called the Tower of Power.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, I just love that you got that. They ended up with that engine. I mean, that's just, it's probably super easy to fix too. And it was so popular back in the day. It's probably people like still running them.
Yeah, it seems okay to get parts for. And I mean, I doubt it has very many hours on it. The thing about these Alberta boats is they're a real novelty. You know, it's not, you're not running the boat every day. you're running it, you know, and even me with being a fucking outdoor enthusiast and not having a regular job, I'll be lucky to get out 20 times a year if I'm lucky.
Yeah. And how many hours per, I mean, even if, yeah, this probably doesn't have that much time on.
Like 20 hours, 20 outings a year would be like, that's
every weekend. 100 hours even.
That's every weekend for 6 months. It would be 20 times a year. So if you're like, have a regular job, even if you're going out every weekend all summer, you're like 12 weekends on. You're like, you know, so at 24 days on the boat, 4 or 5 hours a day. It's not a lot. And there's probably tons of years that didn't fucking move.
Yeah.
Seems to be. I don't think it's moved in a few years from where I have it. Hasn't moved in 2 years or 3 years. I'm sure there's plenty of stretches like that. So you get these boats that seem like they're 40 or 50 years old, but they're really, it'd be the same as a dude in Florida having a boat for 2 years.
Yeah.
Somebody that like lives on a lake, you know, even back where I grew up, if you have a boat, you're going to probably get out on it fucking 50, 60, 70 times a year.
Yeah.
Cause you can just wander down here. It's a fucking ordeal, man. Even for me being an hour out of the fucking city, it's an ordeal. It's like the closest lake's an hour. Period. And then it's an hour and a half or an hour and a half or 2 hours. So if you're in the city, the closest lake's 2 hours, you know, or at least an hour and 45 minutes. Anyway, all that to say, I'm pretty happy with it so far. It's shitty weather now, but I'm hoping to get it out, maybe fishing this week. And the kids are all back next week, so they're all gung-ho to get out on the tube. I mean, they could barely move by the end of the third day. it's pretty good to see. They both Matt Lola's out of town, but Madison and Cassandra both got up on the kneeboard.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool to see. So support the show. GrandMerica.ca/support if you're getting a little value from our podcast over here. Send some value back our way. Time, talent, or treasure, as they say on No Agenda. And we will thank you for it and mention it and read your note. We only got one person to thank so far this week. And that is Michael Frisch again.
Thanks, Michael.
With another 55-55. One time nation. Plus, he signed up for a monthly. So I still thought, he was, he's got to be close to a lord.
Yeah, he's coming up on it, I'm sure.
Of course, if you donate $1,000 or more, you become a lord of Grimerica, which is a pretty good thing, I guess. You know, we got the ranch cat coming up. Reach out if you're coming to that or you want to come to that by donation. We're hoping to get a couple $100 ahead, but pay what you can. And then it looks like it's going to be a good turnout too. So should be a fun one.
So that's like a meetup at your, at the ranch really in Alberta.
Yeah.
And people are coming from all over. So you can drop by, you can come by and plan a trip around it or something, or where you staying, camping on your place or hotels close by. And
yeah, a few people are staying in the town close by, and a few people are camping. So,
yeah,
should be a good mix.
Yeah.
Then the hunting's coming up shortly after that. Tony and Johnny so far will be out here. We'll go hunting, camping for 10 days. I think Keith in the UK is thinking about it right now. Maybe get him and Sam over here doing some real fucking good old boy shit. Be good for him.
I bet him and Tony will get along good too.
Tony and Sam?
No, Tony and Keith, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably. So trying to put that together if you're interested in that little outing. There's a link in the show notes, of course. But we do. Oh, we already did that. So what else we got?
I have an email from somebody about feedback about our other show, Grimerica Outlawed.
Okay, let's hear it.
Hey, Graham, see below. I'm already a Plus subscriber directly from the website. Really enjoyed the last two episodes. 424, Trevor Lohman was relatable to me as I have a background in clinical science. Will definitely get his audiobook. I'm also reading a paperback copy of The Self-Aware Universe, How Consciousness Creates the Material World by Amit Goswami. We've had Amit on a couple times, and it directly relates to what was covered on the interview. And 425, the dialogue with AI back and forth was fascinating and an engaging way of presenting it, even though it was a bit leading the witness. Keep up the good work, Darian. So. Thanks, Darian.
Who's leading the witness?
The prompter. The prompt crafter.
Oh yeah, definitely leading the witness. Yeah. And we got some a bunch of feedback about that AI conversation. And then my wife was coming at me with other AI conversations.
Was that good? Did we do it good though? Was it a good way to do it? We read back and forth. Right. Like, Tara and I basically narrated the AI conversation.
It was kind of gay, but it was all right.
It's better than having AI do it.
I guess. You could have just done the whole thing.
No, yeah, it was good to have you in there.
Interactive you, art.
Interactive.
Oh, interactive art piece for you.
Yeah.
Support the show.
Theater piece.
Grandamerica.ca/support if you can when you can. Have you got a bio for Taverly?
I do. Taverly is known for making the mystical accessible, blending ancient rituals with modern sensibilities to inspire empowerment and sovereignty. Her website is moontempleschool.com. Her book is out. I've actually got a hard copy here, Sacred Magic, A Witch's Guide to Earth Wisdom. But she's got a new contract with... now I'm going to gap on the publisher's name. Do you remember who she said?
I do not remember.
It's that Llewellyn, the publisher. So her book has been taken down until she republishes it with them. Not taken down, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know, out anymore. She's the founder of the Moon Temple Mystery School, guiding seekers through the mystical landscapes of witchcraft, empowerment, and transformation. She's also an accomplished speaker, social impact, and entrepreneur, and author of upcoming book series that redefines what it means to walk the witch path in today's world. Her practical yet deeply mystical approach resonates with those seeking power and sovereignty in a world that often misunderstands the true essence of the witch. There you go.
Witching ain't easy. Support the show. America.ca/support. Most of all, enjoy the chat with Taverly.
And we are live with Taverly. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to be here with both of you legends in this space. This is exciting.
No way. We're just podcasters. We've just been talking about interesting things for a few years. You know, that's it. You know, the problem is we can't really get too knowledgeable or deep on anything, right? So we love talking to people like you that have been enmeshed in, specific things for a while because we're just touching the surface of all these things, which is good in its own way, but it's also kind of weird, right?
Or maybe you're just opening doors, you know, you're just opening a multitude of doors for people to walk through. And I love that. I love even more that I just heard your Canadian accent. That was joyful.
I sound like I'm stoned and Darren's always stoned. So it's, we say don't change that speed to less than one because then I'll sound really bad.
Yeah. Funny.
There is a Canadian accent and I don't like it, but
I like it. You know, being half Canadian and living in the US, I don't get to hear it very often. And sometimes it comes out for me, people here will hear it. And, you know, it's usually with things like about or the fact that I just pronounce things very clearly. I don't sound American. Maybe I do now. You know, you can tell me by the end of our hour together.
Do you say A still?
No, not really. I have a cousin that just drove down to visit me from Canada. And by the time he left, I could feel myself talking Canadian a little more. But A doesn't come up very often anymore. So feel free, you know, give me the joy of hearing it while we're here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it'll come out automatically. I can't stop it. So
hey. I think it's different from the east to the west.
Yeah, yeah. It might be. Mm-hmm. So what, I mean, we love, this is one of my favorite topics. I do love kind of like earth wisdom, witchcraft, sacred magic and all that. It's, I love talking to people about it because it's such, we're in such an interesting time too, where there seems to be like a massive interest in the metaphysical and the new age, but there's also like a weird pushback that's kind of happening as well. So how long, like, let's talk a little bit about you and your kind of origin story, or how long, you know, what got you into this?
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I think for me is a little unique is that I was, you know, raised in a small mountain town by parents that were hippies, at least for the first few years of my life. And I wasn't really exposed to a lot of, you know, traditional religion. I also was not exposed to anything sort of pagan related either. I was not exposed to any belief system, really. And so in the course of my life, I got to choose little bits to dive into. And it's funny. I love that I have these memories of being like, you know, probably under 10 and walking in my little town from my little house up to a church by myself in my Wrangler jeans and my, you know, cowboy boots. And I'd walk up into a church and I just go sit in the back pew because there was something that I could feel there without having any, you know, attachment to what really they were saying, to be honest. And, you know, they kept trying to shoo me down into Sunday school. And I'm like, oh, no, I like it here. And I think that that curiosity in me to explore what else is out there has always been with me. And I think we're all born with that interest in what else there is. In fact, I think we're all born with the feeling that there's more than the material world, right? We see it in our imagination and how we used to play. And then for me, you know, if you fast forward, you know, life happens, we get busy. And like you, Graham, I, you know, I'm a collegiate athlete. I spent a lot of years playing competitive sports, both in the US and in Canada. And, you know, after kind of that settled, you know, I went through a lot of changes in my life. Part of it is injuries to my body and changing of relationships that really just kind of stripped me bare of how I had identified myself up until that point. And I'm telling you this through the lens of my wisdom now. Right at the time, I would not have been able to verbalize that that's what was happening. And when I found myself, you know, stripped bare, you know, facing, you know, the second part of whatever my life was going to look like in whatever capacity I wanted it to be, I just was more open. And I started to experience the unseen worlds again. Like I can remember experiencing when I was young, you know, when I would sit at the edge of a river and dangle my feet into the flowing water, or when I would, you know, walk up a mountain by myself and hear the sound that would whisper amongst the trees. You know, that came back when I was, you know, stripped down from everything I thought that was going to bring me happiness. And I think we all go through those phases of, you know, the contemplations of what are we here for? Like, what's this? Is this all there is? Is this it? And that, you know, that question probably 20 years ago now, it stayed with me for long enough to where I kept opening my field to experience new things. And the moment I found, I'll say spirituality, but I'm saying it lightly in the sense that I didn't have an organized structure, but the moment I started to awaken deeper and deeper, you know, the right teachers started to appear. And that's what happened for me, you know, teacher after teacher. And then I found mystery schools, which I didn't even know what a mystery school was. And then I started, you know, feeling into this word witch. And I'm like, oh, there's some sort of like deep remembering happening in my body. And then I kept learning and I kept practicing and I tried on a whole bunch of different things, went to a whole bunch of different mystery schools. And in the course of that time, you know, I was still keeping my life pretty segregated. You know, I hadn't come out of the broom closet yet. And there was not a lot of people that I had in my life up until that point where I could have these deep, like esoteric conversations, let alone, you know, conversations about spell work. So I had these like fractured parts of me and I was living with all these fractured parts of me until one day it's like the clothes I was wearing at different times just became too tight. And even during those times, I would keep my tattoos hidden in my professional world. You know, I had all these facets and then a day came to where I just didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't want to do that anymore. And I started consciously, like intentionally bridging my worlds. And I started talking about witchcraft in my, you know, powerlifting communities. And I started talking about, you know, the ways that I was of service to the world or how I was shamanic drumming on the weekends in my professional communities. And it all just formed into who I am today. And I still feel like I'm evolving. You know, I'm still finding out, what cloak am I wearing today? Today, it just happens to be a red shirt. My tattoos are out. But I think that evolution is something that, you know, I'm sure a lot of your listeners and a lot of people can, you know, can understand that no matter what the end result is of what you feel you're embracing today, it's the result of constantly being stripped bare and remembering again.
Yeah, yeah, I totally get that, because there was a part where I really had to keep all my little circles segregated in an unhealthy way, not a healthy way. Like, mm-hmm. Yours sounded much more healthy than mine, but
it wasn't always.
No, I wasn't. But I mean, then I got to the point where I was like, okay, like I'm just going to be me and unapologetically me, and it doesn't matter what I'm doing, whether I'm podcasting or being wherever I am in life, I'm the same guy in a way. But how long through was that for you when you made that shift, like halfway through or just more recently?
I mean, I've been practicing as an out of the closet witch for almost 10 years. And, okay. You know, that path, and I talk about it a lot, the decision to come to be more public in my craft, which I'm sure you've all seen on my social media, is not the path that I would actually even recommend for a lot of people, unless you're going to be, you know, you feel like you need to be out. I think embracing the core of what calls you on your spiritual path doesn't mean you have to do it public. I mean, your inner circles are just as important as public. And I try to differentiate that because I'm a little different, because I do it so publicly that, you know, I always want to let people know, you don't have to go on Instagram and post your rituals like I do. You don't have to do that. But it is an interesting thing to think about, how and where do we allow ourselves to be seen?
What are some of the misinterpretations misunderstandings about witches and witchcraft?
That's a good question. I'll tell you the most commonly asked questions I get. Here they are, and they're funny. Some of them are funny. I get asked a lot if I have a broom. And I mean, people say it with a joke, but like with a smile, but I think that they're genuinely curious. And my answer is I have like 15. And then I usually like pause the sentence there to give, you know, people the chance to explore, like, okay, do I have another question? The second most common question that I get is, am I a good witch or a bad witch? And that is really the crux. And I get asked that in 100 different ways, but really people want to know, because their perception of witchcraft is, you know, often the left-hand path, or what you see on Hollywood, right? Like black magic or dark magic. And I don't like to call it black magic, because really that is a racist way of saying dark magic. So I don't say black magic, but what's known as the left-hand path, people think that that's witchcraft, but there's so many gray areas in between, from good versus evil. And my response to that question on if I'm a good witch or a bad witch is, it depends on how you define good versus bad. And I like having conversations with people when they ask me that question, because the majority of people that ask me that question don't identify on the spiritual path. So they're seekers, or they're just people that I've met and have created a relationship with. And all of a sudden they either find me on social media or they ask me what I do, and somehow it comes out. And they're usually very deep conversations that I enjoy having.
Well, I don't know what to say about that. I kind of want to push back a little bit on the black thing, because things have been black and white for a long time, and it's not had to do with race until very recently. So it kind of,
that's true.
That kind of,
yeah.
They were like probably calling it black magic before they even knew there was black people.
Yeah. Well, it's been called black magic for a long time, but, and it's got to do with the darkness. So I do mm-hmm. appreciate it being called dark, because it's from the darkness. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not from the color black. It's from the darkness, I think.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's more ominous anyway, I think. Dark makes it more.
Yeah.
Dark is a
bit. Yeah, like more. The shadow side. And I totally hear you and understand and agree. I also want to be sensitive to today.
Yeah. Yeah,
I agree with you entirely. I mean, it doesn't. We could just call it baneful magic, right?
Yes, that's
baneful a good one, versus, yeah. you know, good, what people perceive as good magic.
But I think that's a, well, I think that's an important part, because if you ask like somebody like Blavatsky or some of the theosophists, their definition of black magic or dark baneful magic is very, very like, we would think, oh my God, like, that's almost anything is falls under that category. So,
well, if you think
try and define it, because it's it can be used. You know, people can throw it in whatever category they want.
Yeah, it's this idea of if you're doing something that violates somebody else's free will seems to be a common topic in today's conversation and today's spiritual communities, like doing things that violate free will. But the truth is that we're always doing things that violate people's free will all the time. Even just when we're driving down the road and we swear at somebody and, you know, we hope something happens because somebody annoyed you. I mean, you're violating their free will by saying it in a negative way, like an unintended curse. So I don't really practice that. The idea that we have to be concerned about violating free will. I think everybody's individual values on what types of spells or rituals they do is very individual. It's very unique.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, there is a point when it does, when you try and do harm, I guess, is part of, I think one of the more modern definitions would be like when you're trying to harm somebody, using magic to harm others, not even just interfering with free will, but like actual harm. So I know that's subjective too, but.
I mean, hey, it's a valid thing in my world. It's real. The question and conversation about doing harm is a very prevalent conversation. I'll say one thing, that we see people doing harm to others as humans, no matter who they are, all the time, every day. We just have to turn on the news for 5 minutes and see it. So the idea that we think that spiritual practices or any type of witchcraft practices would be absent from the human desires that we already know exist is false. So yes, and you know, doing harm is, you say it's subjective. I think that it follows into that idea of what are your values? You know, what are you willing to do to protect yourself or the people that you love when it comes to doing harm? And we can carry that conversation down the human rabbit hole too. And that would be a big question, right? Like, what are you willing to do to protect the people you love? It's no different asking that question and doing spell work.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I guess what I meant was it shouldn't be so subjective, but I guess that like somebody being offended is subjective. So harming somebody, like I might say something to you, but, or you might call me a name and like I might be offended or not, but that's not necessarily doing harm, I guess. So I was probably wrong in saying that, because harm is probably a little bit more objective, but lately we're treating it as a subjective thing because of feelings and all this stuff. So, but you know, it's also interesting because we come from a place where there was a real persecution of the witches and witchcraft from Christianity. So there's an increase, like the way I see it right now, I'd love to get your take on it, is like there's like materialism has lost the battle. Like people are resonating with all kinds of new age and witchcraft. And we have an increase in Christianity growing as well. And then we have an increase in the new age, but we also have this weird pushback against the new age, because there's a bunch of people around our circles that are calling it, you know, this new world religion which I don't necessarily agree with. I try to push back a little bit, but I see where they're coming from. So where's my question in there?
You lost it.
Yeah. I lost it in that whole rant.
That was a lot of good info though.
Great. But I mean, it is, because I feel like it comes back to the persecutions, like I guess where do you see it after the last couple of years, 10 years, 15 years of this growth of the metaphysical sort of reality, and but also this increase in Christianity, like do you see like that push happening right now?
Yes, and maybe a third area too, and you'll know what I'm talking about, is the wanting to embrace, you know, God consciousness or universal consciousness, and you might call it God, but something that's bigger than just who we are here and today. And that might come through in an increase in traditional religion, but I actually think the increase is in the understanding or the feeling that there is like one universal source. I think that has definitely increased. And I think it's because people are searching for the meaning of it all. We've been through so much change, right, as a planet in the last 5 years. We've been through so much change. And, you know, the you know, the hamster wheel, the idea of the hamster wheel, people want off the hamster wheel. And the moment you can feel like literally feel in your body that there's something more to this than, you know, going to work and waking up and doing the same thing over and over, that you have a purpose, that you incarnated here for a reason, and that you're going to experience certain things for certain ways, and your soul's going to evolve, and then you're probably going to do this again in another lifetime, or that you are an infinite being, that changes the whole purpose in life. And I think that that's what people are searching for, even if there are different avenues to get there.
I think that's what's happening with the collapse of materialism and the, like, you know, the new atheists came in trying to sort of hold their materialistic worldview. I mean, even though it's still kind of running the paradigm in a way, but I think that that's what people need, is that search for meaning. Shelly in the chats just says, I think her view of black magic would be lower vibrational magic. I don't know if that's...
It can be, for sure. Lower. I mean, we can go down that rabbit hole of, you know, demons and demon work and shadow work in the underworld.
I wanted to get there eventually. But Darren, what were you gonna say?
Well, I'm not convinced that the materialism paradigm is collapsing, and maybe it might just be rejiggering a little bit, because I mean, we can't just walk away from materialism completely, because we do still live to a certain extent in a material world. I think it's just got to rejigger. We're kind of having this conversation yesterday off air about there's this kind of this younger generation that just, I mean, being on the hamster wheel is one thing, but I think that there's, you know, it's like, well, if you don't work, what are you going to do? Because I think what you find at the end of the day is you're going to work. You know, it's just a matter of finding what you're going to work at. You got to find that sort of passion and work towards it, because, you know, there's the other side of it where, you know, when you quit working, you die. They say that retirement is like the most dangerous thing for people. It's like once you, and even if it's a job you hate, you sort of find, I guess, some shitty purpose in it. But I think that, I see materialism sort of just breaking up into a less centralized sort of thing that's going to go through a weird period, and will hopefully come out the other side with, I don't know, but there's definitely this getting off the hamster wheel or getting out of the hustle is coming, even for people who are doing well. You know, like I know people who are doing well by sort of all standards, you know, but they're just sort of sick of work. They're even in a job that they don't mind, you know, and they're like doing well at it. And they're just like, I'm sort of sick of it. And I don't know, because I don't work anymore, but I work more than anybody I fucking know. I mean, if you ask my wife, she'd be like, fuck that. This guy don't work. That's all he fucking does. And, you know, from morning until dark every night, and I got to drag him out of the office. But it doesn't feel like work to me. It sort of feels like play. And I don't know what the point of that is, but I don't think materialism is gone. I think it's just sort of reshaking on what a sovereign person's role in that is going to be, because we got to keep moving materials around to a certain extent. Or do you think that is something different, is there a different definition for that than materialism? Maybe that's a question for Graham.
Yeah, I think Graham can define how he meant by materialism. I assumed what he meant by that, but that's a good question.
Well, Darren seems to go there when I say materialism. He seems to go to that. I mean more of like the physical, the pair. I'm trying to, now I can't, I'm gapping on the word. There's another word besides materialism that's a little more more scientific. I just mean that we're stuck in this sort of Newtonian physics paradigm where we don't accept there's any metaphysical reality. That's kind of what I mean by materialism. And the atheist kind of like materialist, that sort of thing is more of like an atheist type paradigm where they think that there's no other realm of spirit. There's nothing else out there besides our physical reality. That's kind of what I mean. And that's collapsing. Like that just can't hold weight any longer.
So animism maybe is waking up more as you're as opposed to animism, materialism versus animism.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I understand what Darren's saying too, because you did mention about people's jobs and all that. We're in an interesting spot because like Darren said, people are going to work. You got to do something productive, right? You got to do something. So what are you going to put your time and your energy? What's going to give you that productive, satisfied feeling? You got to be doing something. So either
the fact that Call of Duty isn't going to do it. You know, it's just not.
Maybe for a bet.
Or maybe like binge watching Netflix. It's not going to do it. It's just, you know, and I think there was a time when I wanted to not work, and that's what was going through my head. You know, I want to not work so I can party and watch TV and play video games and do all these things I'm trying to cram into the weekend. And thank fucking God I had to keep working through that time. Cause if I didn't, I probably would have killed myself or, you know, with drugs or alcohol, or just, I would have been a wasted fucking life back then. So it's like, in some ways I didn't get the reward to not work until I was willing to do a shitload of work that was unpaid as well. I had to be willing to do a bunch of unpaid work for the world before I noticed any sort of return on it.
And that is that part of your path as a writer, Darren? Is that part of it for you?
Oh, I don't know.
Yes, yes, of course.
Yeah. And I can relate to that because you know, not just with the first book I published, but with this current publishing deal that I have now, there's so much endless amounts of work that goes into a book that isn't actual paid time, right? And maybe we look at work differently as, you know, sometimes we need work to pay our bills because the current energy exchange of our planet is still money. We still need access to money.
And the thing with that is if you didn't have that, you would have to work anyway. Because if you didn't have the money, then it's okay. Well, you got to get out in that field today then and make sure there's no weeds in the vegetable patch, or make sure you're going hunting, or make sure.
Right.
So there's some sort of exchange going on.
So that's, you know, still here that you're talking about. Yeah, it definitely. I think that exchange still happens. But it's all about the lens at which you look at it through, right? I mean, some of the most powerful witches that I know have corporate jobs or day jobs that they enjoy because it is an easy way for them to bring in revenue to fund the lifestyle that they have. And they don't find it, they're not finding it in hardship to do an exchange of service or time. And they find joy in it. Even if it's a grind some days, they, you know, it's the lens at which they look at it. And there's one woman that I know, you know, she talks about this pretty publicly, is that she, you know, she has a corporate job and it's, you know, it's not necessarily just her purpose, but the teams that she manages and the humans she interacts with, she brings her magic into her workplace every day without about magic. And she likes the people. So the work itself is not necessarily what's fulfilling, but she, and it wasn't always that way, right? She had to do a lot of work on herself to find the joy in the ways that she makes money. And so that's what I mean by, it's also the lens at which you're looking at that stage of your life and what are you doing for that exchange?
I love that. Yes, I totally love that. Yeah, it's just, it kind of comes back also to like some of the Buddhist stuff where, you know, you, when you're sweeping the floor, just be sweeping the floor.
Just be sweeping the floor. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I there's power in that. There's so much power in just being present with what it is that you're doing and finding the joy there. Because another interesting thing I find, you know, as a teacher of these topics that we talk about, sometimes it's not just powerful to chase the stars. You know, people want those high spiritual big hits and ceremonial magic. And we do that. I do that lots and I love it. But it's not more powerful than putting both feet on the ground where you're at, like right there and then, and finding joy in that moment. It's not more powerful than that. The question is, can you be present with just that moment at a time? I mean, that's really the work. And I know that's also a big topic, but
I like it. That's a really good way to say that. I want to read something from Shelley as well. She says, I'm so thankful for this episode today. I've been so frustrated with the demonization of witches and non-Christian mysticism in alternative media lately. That's what I'm talking about, right? That's exactly. People fear things they don't understand. So yeah, there's been the like this.
Right.
What?
The woke, right?
Yeah. I don't want to get political about it, but yeah, because we're in this like conspiracy community kind of, because all these things intersect and a lot of them have been suppressed by the mainstream. And now we have this like pushback to Christianity, but also I'm thinking like, is this like a modern sort of witch trial thing? Like, why are you so upset at New Age? Like they're getting upset at New Age again, almost as if like Madame Blavatsky was right back in the 1800s saying like, don't do yoga, don't do any of these things because you need to be initiated first. Well, so, and I struggle with it because I do think you should have some training in some of the stuff. That's kind of what I wanted to get into with you on if you have all these, like I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about how it was in terms of like witchcraft too. And she was saying that if you don't really know what you're doing and you're messy, your spells are messy anyways, just go ahead and do it. And I'm like, whoa. Well, hang on a sec. Doesn't it depend on what kind of magic and what kind of spells you're working on? I mean, you don't want to be messing up some important sort of summoning spells or something like that. Like they, so I'm of two minds because I kind of understand what some of the Christian, the deeper Christian thinkers would say about the risk of this stuff, because we've talked about enough of this stuff on the show where when you're summoning, like I kind of like partition off whatever I play around with summoning and like protection, right? Like I don't want to go out there and ask for any kind of contact with anything. After seeing enough from trying to make contact with UFOs and all that kind of stuff, like yeah. I don't want to do that. So I wanted to ask you about like safety in your practice and like, and the shadow work and the, you know, the demons and all that. Like, don't we have to be careful with all that stuff? And don't we have to be careful that people are trained when they go about this? And I know you're a teacher, so you're probably, this is what you do.
Yeah.
And what anyways, about like having as far as the bigger picture goes too.
And what about having like a clean fucking mindset? Like how much self-work should go in before you start playing with other things?
I'm writing down these questions because they're all really good.
Yeah. And that's kind of what the mystery schools, like when I started learning about the mystery schools and these secret societies, they wanted you to do all that work on yourself. You had to go in, like getting your shit together. You couldn't just go in like all like, you know, with all these issues going on because it's going to mess you up. So that was,
let's talk about that first, that part first, the clean mindset. So the most powerful course that I teach in Mystery School, which is Moon Temple Mystery School, is the High Priest and the High Priestess class. And anybody that asks me like what they should join or what they should sign up for, it's that, because that is the deep dive transformational 13 steps. Like here's all the elemental magic. We do deep shadow work. We, you know, to me, any deep transformational magic or spell work that you want to do, it can never overcome your beliefs. Like your beliefs are more powerful than the spells you're casting. And so, you know, the path that I teach is the whole package, because having a clean mindset and working on yourself to me is part of learning how to cast powerful spells and rituals. I mean, you are the foundational piece. So yes, you know, Darren, I'm a big supporter of that. And my books are all very, very much this bridge between, yes, magic is powerful. Yes, these spells and rituals work, but they don't work more than you're going to work on yourself. It's just, they don't. And that's a totally separate, you know, conversation, Graham, than what we were talking about in terms of safety. So with great power comes great responsibility, right? Once you have cleared your energy field and you know how to manipulate energy, both your own and the energy around you or energy of the world. I mean, spell work is manipulating energy and outcomes. When you know how to do that and you can, whether you're summoning, you know, higher conscious levels of beings or lower underworld, denser beings, whoever you're calling in for support, if you have leaks in your own field, right, it's you. If you have leaks in your own field, there is the possibility, yes, that things could go awry. But it's not just about like what words you use to summon them. I mean, I'll say in 98% of the case, it's not, because most people don't have enough knowledge or access to knowledge to be able to call in or work with really powerful entities that could take you over, right? It's very, very rare, unless you're playing in that field. Right. If you're playing in that field, that's a different story. So safety and protection, yes, a little bit. The best safety you can do before any spells or rituals is just to ground your own energy and make sure you're clear. Like if you're carrying any baggage from the day or you're carrying any baggage in stress as a whole in your life, you shouldn't be casting big, powerful spells because you're bringing that baggage into the spell with you. But of course, over time, you know, we can all learn how to ground and how to meditate or whatever it is that you do, whatever rituals you do to clear energy. You can learn to do that quickly. So it's possible to move between being a human that carries stress and change and move into spell work, you know, fast. But that's, you know, the question about safety and protection is such an interesting one. I get asked this question all the time. And 90% of the time that I get asked about protection, it's people need protection from themselves and their own relationships and life choices more than they need protection from spirits. You know, people that don't know how to set boundaries want to do protection magic right away. And I'm like, well, human stuff first, and then we'll deal with protection magic. But most of the time, the human work and how we navigate our life clears up need for that. You know, in again, unless you're playing in that field. Now, I have removed entities from humans. I've been a part of ceremonies that remove entities from humans, exorcisms. Like, I've been a part of all of those things. And in most of those cases, those entities that have gone into a human body comes from that own human's trauma that becomes this own little black cloud that lives inside of them, that either is an opening for something to enter them, or that little black cloud of trauma inside of them becomes sentient. And it becomes a thing that you're literally just pulling trauma out of somebody, not another spiritual being. And this comes from the field. Like, this is, you know, real experience from the field. So, and that's why I say, like, the idea that we need, you know, a lot of safety and protection before we summon or before we do big work. Well, sometimes, but we more need to do work on ourselves and handle our own shit than we need to worry about protecting ourselves from, you know, deep, dark energies.
I like that. Okay.
Can I get fucked up by a witch if I'm just here minding my own business? Is there like any ingrown protection I have, or how do I know if witches are fucking with me?
And it doesn't even have to be a witch. It can be anybody that knows how to manipulate energy, right?
There's a few of them.
Power. The most powerful thing you can do is make sure you're doing daily energy hygiene, which is through meditation or grounding practices, and scan your body. Like, how do you feel in your body? Are you carrying a sore back right now? In fact, Darren, you do have some, like, I'm just going to read you a little bit. I'm going to take this as consent to read you a little bit, but kind of in the back of your neck, lower neck, upper back, you have a little spot there. Do you have an ache that sits in that upper part of your back? Is that where you carry stress?
I don't know. I have a bad shoulder.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Could be.
You know, I mean, the parts of our body where we carry stress are the parts that energy can come into, right? If you were to see, let's just visualize yourself as if we could put you in a ball of color that was a color of your choosing, that, you know, that you can visualize yourself inside of, and you can scan your body inside of that, and you can seal up this little energetic bubble. You know, once you start doing something like that, like grounding meditation and then putting yourself in a bubble, you're going to know where that bubble is not sealed based upon what doesn't feel good in your body. So that's why I've gone to that place in your body. So my suggestion for you would be to do a meditation and a grounding twice a day. This would be something anyone can do for 21 days. By the way, this is a foundational practice I teach. 21 days, you morning and night, you do a meditation, breath work, or grounding, and then you close your eyes. And for about, usually really only takes about 5 minutes of visualization, picture yourself inside, you know, a clear or like an iridescent type bubble. Picture yourself inside that bubble. It could be something like a clamshell that closes over you, or just a circular, like a bubble that you would blow from a wand. Picture yourself inside of that. And for 5 minutes, you just hold that. You see yourself inside this completely encompassed bubble. So breath work and meditation, visualization for 5 minutes, hold yourself in the bubble. And before you finish, you say out loud, this is my protection, this is my protection, this is my protection. And you don't stop until you can see it. Morning and night, same exercise for 21 days. And on the 22nd day, you wake up and just close your eyes without any rituals or meditation, and just see, can you see yourself sitting at the center of this bubble? And if you can, your energy is in a protected state. Every day you should check that, just as a human, not as even as a witch. You should check that. And what you might find is, if your shoulder's aching, you might see a little ripple in the bubble behind you, in that spot where that bubble of protection could be. For a lot of us, for a lot of women specifically, that bubble falters kind of in the area in front and behind our throats. Right. And then in the front and behind of our reproductive organs, where women carry trauma. For men, it's going to be more like neck, shoulders, usually like a surrounding circle, almost like a Saturn ring in that area. You can see kind of holes come through that. That's the best energy protection that you can do.
So just weed won't do it?
Well, I think weed might lower your protection bubble a little, if I'm honest.
I mean, yeah, maybe. I try not to complain because I got a pretty good life going on over here.
He's got a pretty solid ego too. I don't know if like he might just be like resilient. I don't know about that ego. Kind of stuff. Like in a good way.
Or maybe he just has it's funny that you say that because what he might
I'm Indian too. So like maybe some of that. I have like dream catchers all around this bitch.
Yeah. Like, you might things might just bounce off of you. Like you that's what I'm seeing it as. Things might Graham's laughing. Things
just won't let anything get to him. So it's just,
yeah, it could be. But I hope
dream catchers. I mean, I have a dream catcher in every room of the house, all the bedrooms, all the cars, I was gonna say
the vehicles too. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I mean, but also what could you have done in this lifetime that would make witches want to send baneful magic your way?
Well, I mean, I'm on the podcast talking shit all the time. I don't have much of a filter. I'm divorced. So there's a few by, and you know, there's witches listening. So,
yeah. Well, I, one thing that I always kind of laugh about too, is remember that to do a really good baneful magic working takes a lot of energy. So the practitioner doing it has to really want something to be done because a one time.
I'm probably down to like one or two.
it takes a lot of energy and output, not just to do a one time shot.
Do you have to like know the person too, or can you just like zap a total stranger, or do you have to have some sort of inkling of them?
I can zap a total stranger.
Oh, really? So it could just be disgruntled listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is why we can ever go on Joe Rogan.
Or bring me with you. There you go. I'll be your backup. Now I do the ritual that I shared with you. And in fact, honestly, you could do it together as part of this podcast too, to put a layer of protection around the content that you share. And it is a powerful practice for anybody to do. And it is highly unpenetratable when you do it regularly. It is, it's a shield.
What about some of the older sort of methods? Like maybe that's for different stuff, but you hear about people putting like salt on the windows. My wife has these little rocks. They're kind of like white and long. I don't know what they're called, but she's
selenite.
Got it's in every window of the house. And that
for sure. Yeah. I mean, house clearing, one of the things that I teach is house clearing with sacred smoke and then sealing all the entrances to your home. You can use salt, you can use stones. I mean, that's a physical space. That's different than your energy, right? So space is protecting your physical space would be a different.
I never leave the physical space.
Yeah, well, you are the physical space then. Okay. All the stones, all the tools work to protect your space. There's also a lot of practices that I teach about how to ward your home, how to put a spiritual being, like giving a being a job or a land spirit that already resides on the lands that you live on, because we're all walking on top of lands that people have lived on for thousands of years. And so their spirits are still around. You can call upon and work with land spirits and place them as guardians of your space. Like give them a job. And that takes a little bit more effort and time because, you know, if you're going to invoke a spirit and give them a job, they require offerings in return and respect and they'll work hard for you. So, you know, there's lots of reasons why people want to physically protect their space, especially if you live in a certain area where that's necessary. But regular cleansing and sealing of entrances of your home, or even just regular sealing of your property line, is super powerful.
Yeah, I think we had Dave Zilla on not too long ago. We were talking about his AI grimoire, A Book of Shadows for Contemporary Chaos. And he talked about just make friends with your house spirit. Like, just make friends with your house spirit. Like,
oh, for sure.
Cats, like these, you know, people have had these. I mean, the Egyptians seem to be really into cats, and there's something weird about pets that we've got this relationship with them. I mean, sure, it could just be a simple thing like getting rid of mice or getting rid of that, but it seems to transcend that mm-hmm. in some ways. And pets seem to act weird sometimes and see stuff that we don't see. So is there any connection to that? I mean, I even think I remember some like back in the day, there's some like connection between witches and cats.
Mm-hmm. There's connection between witches and all animals, all things that are alive.
Witch always had a cat.
Yeah. A lot of mythology talks about that, but witches connect with everything that's alive. Right. And that's everything. So yeah, sometimes, I mean, animals are really powerful protectors. Animals are healers. There's a lot of animal shamans that work specifically to teach people how to work with their own pet or to communicate with pets that you've had that have passed over that are not in a physical form anymore. They're just as powerful too. Current pets and previous pets, pet spirits they're definitely powerful.
Which one's better? Is one's better than the other? Dog or cat? Which one?
No, I can't. I can't say that. I can say that. I can say that there are so many other pets that are not dogs and cats.
True. I have horses. They seem kind of special too.
See, I knew you were going to say that. Your horses are probably your protectors.
Really? That's good. That's good, because it really feels like I'm just fucking waiting on them hand and foot most of the time.
Yeah, they are probably your protectors. That would be my guess.
This kind of gets into, you mentioned in one of your videos recently about connecting with body and nature. Mm-hmm. It seems like two underappreciated aspects of it, which I guess is what you're saying, right? Connecting to life and nature, mm-hmm. grounding, I guess, in nature and your body, like that as a man, I have a hard time feeling stuff in the body in some ways, you know, like you mentioned, you know, feeling it. I mean, I feel pain, physical pain, but feeling like spiritual sensations and stuff, it's very tough.
Mm. It's an important facet when you're looking to develop your psychic or spiritual gifts for sure, because they are still coming through your human body. Most of the time when people feel like they get blocked spiritually or that they don't have any type of psychic gifts or they don't have any inner knowing, it's that they don't know how to connect with the parts of their body that the information is coming through, right? Our sensory field in connection to whether it's a tree or putting your feet in the grass or a human that has died that you're related to, like an ancestor, all those sensations come in your body. It's not outside of you, even if it originates outside of you. So that means it's super important to be able to feel in your body. And, you know, if you find, for example, Graham, it's really hard to, like, you don't feel intuition in your belly, that might not be your thing. You might have an auditory sense, right, that could hear, you know, forgotten songs of your ancestors or whispers from the wind that bring you messages. Or maybe it's through your sense of smell, or maybe it's just this knowing that comes into your thoughts instead of in your belly. So, but it's all still part of the body. So it depends on what part of the body you feel like you can't connect to. I do think that for most people, there is one or two areas that is kind of more natural, even though everything can be developed. Really, it's a muscle, right? Yeah.
Is there any benefit to the fact that I'm still walking around in this on the same ground that my people have been walking around with for the last 10,000 years? Like, almost everybody in the world is transplanted, you know, and I'm not saying I'm Marcanian Graham, but, you know, Graham's history, if you go back a couple hundred years, it's going to take you over a sea to another land where he might have some natural protection mm-hmm. from ancestors doing this, that, and the other thing. But I just wonder if there's something different about being in the same place for, you know, as your ancestors for thousands of years.
Well, for
English people that are still in England have been doing the same thing, mm-hmm. right? They've been there for a couple thousand years now doing ceremonies and druid shit and making stone circles. Like, that's got to carry something. Like, when I'm out hunting, I'll come across all these medicine wheels all the time. You can tell when you get to because the farmers and the ranchers, they always stack the rocks in the corner. And you can tell the medicine wheels, even the small ones, because they're always at the top of the tallest hill in the area. So you'll find even a little one. You don't know, but some Indians made that shit. Who knows when? And no one's ever bothered to just move them rocks. Probably no one ever will. But there's something about that, you know, that you're still walking over these things. There's like a feeling that comes over you when you're out there. That's like, huh, you know, so these motherfuckers rode here doing the exact same thing I'm doing. Who knows?
Yes. Yes. And when you say that you feel that when you experience it, you're feeling it inside your body. Like, it's not, you know, it's still a sensation, an emotion or a sense or something that you feel in your body. And so connecting to your body is really important, because a lot of this knowledge that we seek, you know, can't be found in this. And it can only be found, and that's I'm holding up my cell phone. It can only be found inside of our body. And the most powerful way to spend more time with your body, of course, is in nature, but is to put all electronics away. So you're forcing yourself to hear what's out there, not what's coming through your earbud. I mean, I find it hilarious that kids today say walking without earbuds in your phone is called walking naked.
I love it. What? I did that the other day. I took my earbuds out just to listen to the birds for a bit. It was weird. Yeah, I was like, yeah. Oh, I'm gonna try just shutting these off and walking naked. I love it.
I never wear headphones.
Yeah.
Except when I'm doing the show. I've even stopped at this point. I very rarely, even the last little while when I'm in my truck. You know what? I went on that trip with Nikki the dude, and he doesn't play music the whole time. We're just cruising. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of slipped into that pattern. So now when I'm driving half the time, I'm just fucking cruising, not listening to anything ever, yeah, unless I'm in my office or in my bedroom.
So amazingly, Darren, you are tuning out the outside world and you are probably tuning into the inside world a lot more. Could be your thoughts, could be your brain, could be your body, could be your feelings. When we turn off external outside world, our inside comes out. Now, sometimes it can be like the things that we think about over and over again. Sometimes we loop, so it's not always healthy. I encourage you to keep doing it because it's amazing.
Honestly, it's the hunting and the fishing is what it comes down to. Those are the two things I do with a lot of my time that there's no room for anything else. You know, you can't be on your phone when you're fishing. You got to be paying attention to the fishing. Yeah. And when you're hunting, you're not interested in your phone. You're just like creeping around the woods, or it's pretty hard. I would say hunting even more so than fishing is the one thing that probably makes you more present than anything else outside of catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff. I thought you were gonna say sex.
Well, sex too. I mean, sex would be up there too for sure, but I mean, catastrophe shit gets real real quick, you know what I mean? Or a car crash or this or that, it's like, oh, whoa, we're here and we're not thinking about anything else. Sex would probably be on that list too.
You're talking about presence.
Presence,
yeah, because it's hard to be present today. You have to just
you have to choose it.
You literally have to choose it without being present 1 minute. I mean, and I make a living on people not being present, so don't stop listening to the show, but don't listen all the time.
Speaking of that, I wanted to talk about your book too. I mean, I can't believe we waited this long, but I mean, I know it's probably what we've been talking about is in your book, but Sacred Magic, A Witch's Guide to Earth Wisdom. Do you want to mention?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, that book is not for sale anymore.
Well, it's going to be though, right?
Yes. I shall tell the story briefly, is that I self-published this book, right? This is like my blood, sweat, and tears. And and it's the first of four books. Each are set in the elemental direction. So this is book one in the north. And a few short weeks after I self-published the book, I happened to be at a big witch conference and met someone from Llewellyn Worldwide, and they ended up offering me a multi-book deal. So my self-published book came down, and so now it'll be re-released in 2026 under the Llewellyn banner, but it might have a different name. So if anyone is interested in it, you know, you can sign up for the wait list and I will let you know when it comes out. But yeah, the book, it's, wow, what an amazing process. And Darren, I know you've done a lot of writing. I don't know if you have, Graham, but you know, publishing a book is like no other. Like, what a self-discovery journey. And good, you know, learning discipline, learning new tools, new skills, and also new spiritual skills, because my rituals and spells are different when I'm writing.
Why is that? What do you mean?
Well, for me, there's a spirit that comes with the book. Like, the book itself becomes its own like entity.
Okay.
You know, book one, the entity of book one was very present in my life. And so my rituals and spells all they pivoted to being about supporting this entity that the book itself became. And it was really strange because when I, you know, now that I'm working on all the different books, because book two is in the pipeline, it's almost complete. the spirit of book two is very different because it's the element of air. So it's the winged ones. And so all these winged beings are with me, and I'm still trying, and I'm moving between like the earth beings and this, these winged beings and these spirits of these books. And so my rituals have been very much dialed into these elemental energies that are coming with the books. It's been fascinating.
Oh, that is fascinating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed it very much. And, you know, writing is it's a labor of love.
Congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. I'm sure you heard of Llewellyn, right?
Inflammatory without having to face the consequences in real time.
Say that again.
I said I find writing a good place to be a little bit inflammatory without having to face the consequences in real time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can we just circle back a little bit to the what Shelley and we were talking about, because I feel like we can address that a little bit better, not better, but more. What do we say to the people that are demonizing witches and the non-Christian mysticism? Like, how do we respond to that? Or how do you respond to that? How should we?
Well, the truth is that I don't respond to that. I don't typically engage in conversations where people want to bicker about, you know, the ultimate source of where we come from and how we live our lives and what sovereignty is. Because to me, I believe sovereignty means I can be over here and practicing what I believe in, so can you. And I can hold that space and respect that for you. So and people that have a hard time wanting to discuss witchcraft or, you know, want to demonize witches, I talk to many of them. When they approach it as, tell me more about what your practice is, how do you identify that? And I might ask a religious person, like, tell me how God works for you. Tell me. And usually we end up going down the rabbit hole of, tell me what happened to Mary Magdalene in the Bible, because, you know, if they can cut her out and they can cut all the women out of the Bible, then don't you think there's a problem? And usually we end up going down usually a good conversation. You know, with all things, everything is skewed and demonized until you really explore it for yourself.
Yeah.
Humanizing of witches to me means we need to be more in our power and be living examples of what's possible. And of course, I'm grateful. I live in a time where I don't have to worry about my life being taken for what I practice. I am very aware that what I do on stage and what I do publicly, a while ago, I would have been killed for doing what I do. So I don't take that for granted. And if you didn't know this, there are still 13 countries in the world, last I checked, that can prosecute a human for practicing witchcraft.
Wow.
So it's, you know, we're not fully in the clear yet. So in terms of what do we do about it? Well, we all become the living example of all beliefs and all traditions are welcome. That if we're going to embrace sovereignty, then we're embracing sovereignty.
Exactly. Exactly.
You can't have it both ways, that I'm sovereign, but you can't do what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, how have you approached, or how does witchcraft approach like cancel culture? And because I feel like it's also been, especially after COVID, it seems like a lot of these sort of movements were separated and polarized. And
I mean, there's many different factions of witches, yeah. Right? I mean, I know witches that do collective spells against, the current United States government. I know witches that do collective spells against the witches that do the collective spells against the government. So, I mean, there's,
that's kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah. Isn't there some sort of like level of discernment about, truth and about what's sort of fake out there and stuff? Like
but that's a human concept and not a witch concept. I mean,
yeah, but
having agency over what you consume and what you believe to be true, having agency over yourself.
But becoming adept at these spiritual practices to me means that you should be able to, not you personally, like just in general, be able to discern a little bit more about what we're being lied to about.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
In the world, like when you get to this level of adeptship, it surprises me how many people are just like going off into this weird realm of like,
yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay, so
I don't want to get too political, but
It's interesting. I see even within my own communities and the groups of people that I teach, there are some people that just still won't face their shadows.
Right. Right.
You know, being spiritually enlightened or being a witch doesn't mean that you have mastered walking your shadows. And I think that that's what you're talking about. There is a lot, you know, which is why when I said before, it is really powerful to look at the stars, but it's more powerful to have your feet, both of your feet flat on the ground. That's the same thing with shadow work. You know, you can do all the powerful spells in the world, but if you haven't addressed your shadows, you know, are you walking around as a human that can actually see the world in the way that you're referencing? Probably not.
Yeah. Do you see the movement growing right now? Like, especially the, what you're talking about where this true sovereignty, because I totally agree with you. Like, how can you have a problem with what anybody's doing? If you, you know, because you don't want to be judged for how you're practicing your practice. So how can you be judging other people? So,
yeah,
but I see that. Is it still growing, do you think?
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it grow necessarily towards people returning to religion. I still see people in throngs, you know, leaving religion or finding a way to embrace both, right? Like, how can I embrace both God and the fact that I'm a creator of my reality, which is witchcraft? How maybe they don't use the word witch, but they're, how do I manifest, you know, more peace and joy in my life and still believe in God if I don't want to buy into the doctrine of how I have to practice my belief in God? I think that that continues to be explored. And I mean, there's a lot of really interesting churches or temples that are opening that I'm aware of that are not based in one particular religion or another, that they're opening the idea that people want to come in and, you know, be able to talk about the fact that, you know, this Christ consciousness or this ability to connect with universal source exists without having to fit in a box. I think we're going to continue to see more and more of that develop. Now, the path of witches specifically, I'm not sure, you know, it's still pretty, it's edgy.
Do you think is there stuff that you want to talk about with your courses and your website? Is there anything we left out with your book? Anything like that that we should?
I actually really just enjoy talking to both of you. So if anybody wants more, they can, you know, go to my website and check it out. I have lots of things coming. You know, the fall change of the season is a powerful time. I have a lot of different things coming up where we start as the earth is doing its slow descent into the darkness, at least in our part of the earth. It's slow descent into darkness as we get closer and closer to fall, where the veil starts to thin. I mean, this is my season, so I have lots going on, and it's moontempleschool.com, so people can check it out. But I mean, I really have just enjoyed having this conversation, Graham and Darren. It's great, and I love it, Darren. You like to poke. It's interesting. It's good.
That's my job here.
I see that. It's good.
Do you have any other questions, Darren, at all? Or
where can people find you? You mentioned the one website. Do you have any social media stuff like that? We put it on the show notes, but most people don't ever check the show notes. So
yeah, definitely go to TikTok and search Athena in my blood _ in between each word. And you might get a distressing content menu pop up because I talk about witchcraft on my TikTok page. And you can search my first name pretty much on every platform and you'll find me, because there's only one Taverlee in the world. And so it's Taverlee. And you just type in that's my first name, you'll find me. Even though there's probably 1,000 fake profiles on every platform, you'll find me real.
I'm sure I've seen you before.
Years ago or something, I'm sure. Yeah, probably on TikTok. I have a really big, very active, engaged, and committed following on TikTok. Indeed.
The TikTokers seem crazy. I mean, we accidentally have a TikTok for a Canadian political show, and it's just blown up. I mean, I had to get a TikTok. I had to download the app just to keep an eye on it. But it's like, we get so
I love the Canadian political shows on that come up on TikTok. It's been my favorite, and especially, you know, in the last couple of months, this year, let's say in 2025, I go find my Canadian peeps on TikTok quite often. So my feed isn't necessarily the feed that people see me on, right? My feed is not the same as well.
I still can't figure out how to work it. It just starts yelling at me as soon as I open the app and I panic and close it. I don't like how it's not on my terms. It's like I'm like the old guy yelling at my phone.
Oh, you have to go to the For You page and turn your volume off so you go slow.
Oh, is it? Because it's like everything else, I can open it up and I can sort of engage with it on my terms. But it's like, open up TikTok and it's like, I can't even open it up in bed in the morning if the wife's still sleeping, because it's like, it just starts making noise.
So the first thing you do is turn your volume all the way off and open it up. Now, TikTok is different. Your For You page on TikTok is not who you follow.
No, it's just opens up.
It's always all new. But you do have a following tab you can scroll to if you want to see the people that you follow or what's happening in your sector. But I have a habit of keeping my volume off when I first go on TikTok because most people are using good captions now.
Yeah, it's a bit much.
TikTok is a bit much. This is true.
I haven't followed anyone, so I don't think I'll get that far.
Well, you should follow me.
We'll try going live on TikTok today because we can't ignore it any longer. It's becoming this sort of like for the Canadian stuff, it's our biggest market. So
I go live on TikTok on Wednesdays at 6 Eastern.
Interesting. We're going to try it today for the first time. We'll see how it goes. Good.
You'll do great. You should follow me and let me come in and support your Canadian politics show.
I'll see what I can find, if I can figure that all out.
It's really simple. You know, the photo and video tab at the bottom, you just keep scrolling and you'll be live. A live tab will open.
Perfect. Taverly, this has been great. We appreciate you taking some time out of your day to come on the show. And we encourage everyone to get the book when it comes out and check out your website and come back anytime.
Yeah, let's do this again.
Yeah, this would be great. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks. It's nice meeting you.
Okay.
Nice to meet you both.
Have a good day. And that was a chat with Taverly, Sacred Magic, A Witch's Guide to Earth Wisdom. That was a fun one. What'd you think?
That was great. Yeah, I'd love to have her back on.
Yeah, that was good. We do have to give a shout out to Timmy, Lord Timmy in the chat, so he made the point to send us $50 during the show.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Timmy. And also, she should do it on audiobook. Taverly should do audiobooks if she can. I don't know if it's too late to put that in her contract or not, but it'd
be great. Audiobooks, yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting because my new book just came out. It's going to come out on audio this week, and I'm going to actually just watch the numbers this time on audio versus print. I mean, the print still, I mean, the ebook and the print are almost exact. Not for my book, in general, because we have, 50 or 70 ebooks and 50 or 70 paperbacks for sale. And they are every month about neck and neck, 50-50.
That's a good idea. How did Timmy send us money? We're still demonetized.
Well, he PayPal'd it. He sent it on PayPal. So thanks, Timmy. Thanks, Taverly, for coming on the show. Thanks to you guys for listening. Bigger thanks. If you're one of the supporters, head over to grandamerica.ca/support today. Sign up for a monthly or make a one-time donation. We count on you guys for our livelihood. So thank you. Check out grandamericaoutlaw.ca for controversial content. a-list.ca for all of our Canadian stuff. That's the one you got to listen and support, or it's only going to 100 episodes. contact@thecabin.com for trips and events. And adultbrain.ca for all the books we're talking about, audiobooks, ebooks, paperbacks, whatever you need. Ground put a link in the show notes to my new book, Unlearned. And what else am I missing? BigSkyTallow.ca. If you buy some of my wife's tallow, the show gets a cut. We make like $10 a jar. So that's another way to support the show and get some tallow. Check all that stuff out. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
5 pink flamingos and a few flamenco dancers. They're in the kitchen and they're baking Day of the Dead cookies. And I step into the kitchen and I'm like, let me have a looky, see what kind of cookie you're cooking up. And they're looking up at me, skeptical. And I point next to my spectacles. And I'm wearing a maroon Harvard t-shirt. Yeah, I know I'm a smart cookie, but I'm no psychic. You can come and ring my bell. But where we're gonna end up in the future, I can never tell. I can never tell. Five of my best friends and a few of my enemies. We're at the coffee shop and we're settling our differences. Benjamin Otto pulls out a game of Chinese checkers and he orders a cappuccino. And And I pick blue and he picks red and you pick yellow. And I'm wearing a tie-dye peace sign t-shirt. Yeah, I know I'm a peacenik, but I ain't no hypocrite. You can come and ring my bell. But where we're gonna end up in the future, I can never tell. I can never tell. One bell, one man. And with my sense of smell, I can smell the salt in your tears. I can sense your fears. You're hoping for a bit of divinity in this worldly vicinity. And you understand the fragility of the human vessel. And you sit Indian style like a pretzel. And you levitate to a transcendental state when you meditate. And you levitate to a transcendental state when you meditate. And you levitate to a transcendental state when you meditate.